The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 198.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to Dose of Leadership. This is your host, Richard Ryerson. As always, thank you so much for tuning into the show. I appreciate your support and listening. And this is the place where you can hear top leadership experts. We hear their stories, their philosophies. It's the show is for you to help all of us become the leaders we were called to be, because whether we know it or not or whether we like it or not, we are all going to be called to leadership regardless if we have the title or not. And so it's in our best interest to learn as much as we can about leadership. And today I got a great guest to help us along that journey. He's Fred Swaniker. I came across Fred when I watched one of his TED Talks. He's a young serial entrepreneur. He's from Ghana, and he's very passionate about Africa. And he believes that the missing ingredient on that continent is good leadership. I love how he flips it on his head because, you know, from my perspective, it just seems like such a place that's full of corruption and it can never be turned around. But Fred sees it a different way, and I love talking with him. You know, he has founded two organizations that aim to catalyze a new generation of ethical and entrepreneurial African leaders. And I love his dream, I love his vision, and I love his action. He's actually doing something about it. He has the African Leadership Academy and the African Leadership Network. You know, he was recognized and he was selected as one of 115 young leaders to meet President Obama at the first ever President's Forum for Young African Leaders. And he's been recognized as a young global leader by the World Economic Forum and was listed in Forbes magazine among one of the top young power men in Africa in 2011. He's also been recognized as one of the best emerging social entrepreneurs in the world. And I love his enthusiasm, I love his optimism, and I love his passion. And I think you're really going to enjoy listening to Fred. So here's Fred Swaniker from the African Leadership Academy. I hope you enjoy it. Fred, so excited to have you on the show. Welcome to Dose of Leadership.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're talking to you from South Africa. I'm right here in the middle of the United States, so the wonders of technology. I was so excited to get you on the show because, man, you are one of those leaders who's facing one of the toughest challenges that we're faced with. But you're all interested about developing the next generation of African leaders. Tell me a little bit more about yourself and that passion, why you're excited about doing that.
Certainly. I was born in Ghana, but I left Ghana at the age of four, and every 4 years of my life, I moved to a new country in Africa. So by the time I was 18, I had really developed an identity as an African, not just as a Ghanaian. And I'd come to see that we had so much potential in Africa. But everywhere I went, I realized that we were being held back by the quality of the leaders that we had.
Right.
And so as I went off to college in the U.S., I went to McAllister College in Minnesota. And then I returned back to Africa. I joined McKinsey and Company in Johannesburg, and they sent me to do more work across Africa. I went to work for them in Ghana, for them in Tanzania, for them in Nigeria. And the more I lived and worked on the continent, there was this recurring theme. Everywhere I went was just, there was no reason for Africa to be poor. We had all these resources. We have all these people who are hardworking, but the one thing that was preventing us from achieving our potential was, you know, we just didn't have good enough leaders. So about 10 years ago, I decided that instead of just sitting back and hoping that this problem resolved itself, I thought, is there a way that I can actually play a role in helping to groom a whole new generation of leaders for Africa? And well, so that's what I've spent the last 10 years doing.
Well, I love the optimism, but let me play devil's advocate. I mean, if from an outsider looking in, I look at it, and obviously all the countries in Africa, the corruption is so – it was just been strife with it. You know, where is the optimism coming from? I love that. I'm excited about that. But then I look at the corruption that's not just in Africa, but in every government, but all the 54 countries or plus that are in Africa, so many of them are corrupt. How do you even begin to tackle that?
Well, I think first of all, it's a fallacy that every single African leader is corrupt. I would say that in most countries in Africa, the vast majority of the people who are in leadership positions are good, decent, hardworking people who are generally trying to do the best thing for the country.
Right.
The problem is one or two people who have managed to get into political leadership in certain countries are corrupt, and those people can drag down everyone else because... Right. The power of just one leader in Africa, I believe, is much greater than in other parts of the world because we don't have strong political institutions that can check the power of these leaders. And so it might be only 0.1% of the leaders in Africa who are corrupt. But because those leaders have so much power, it can really bring the whole country down.
Right.
So that's the nuance that I would add to that picture. And so therefore, you know, given that just one or two leaders can have such a massive impact in Africa, the problem is that we've had leaders who haven't necessarily had the best interests of the continent at heart. So what this means is that if you can put in place good leaders who have good ethics and good values, you don't need that many to be able to transform Africa.
So the
I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, of course it makes sense. I mean, I love that idea, and I love that you. Of course, you know, the old adage of, you know, one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. I like that. What we get fed over here in the United States, though, is that, you know, the corruption is rampant everywhere. So it's encouraging for me to hear you say that, hey, maybe it's just only a handful of few out of these seven that have been really bad. Really, the potential is there. And I think that's really what you're getting at. The potential is there. And so what you're tapping into is let's go comb the continent. Let's find these potential leaders. It's got to begin somewhere. And if we can put in, because as you said, if we can put in somebody that has the moral backbone to do the right thing, we put them in there, it's going to be easy for us to turn this around because we don't have, as you said, kind of the political institutions like we have in the United States. It's so one leader can make a greater impact than both good and bad is what you're saying. And so the idea
One leader in Africa can have much more impact there than anywhere else in the world because you don't have these strong institutions. I mean, if you look at, you know, a leader in a more developed market country like Western Europe or in the USA, you have a 300-year-old constitution, you have a judiciary, you have a Senate, you have a Congress, which are very, very strong institutions. And so, you know, if a leader says they want to change a law, they just can't do that. If they say they want to, you know, be in power forever, they just can't do that because you have these strong institutions that will check their power. In Africa, you don't have these strong institutions. So therefore, just one leader has a disproportionate impact on society.
Right.
And so if you can put in place just a few good leaders in a quick generation, you can transform the continent.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think you're right. And I think, you know, one thing you got going for you too is – to me, I think with, you know, obviously we're all caught up in the technology boom and everything else. It seems like Africa would be, if anything's going to turn it around or at least help turning around, it's the advent of technology. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, Africa has many disadvantages. You know, it's one of the poorest continents in the world. You know, it's got lots of incidences of conflict and disease and so forth. But on the other hand, we also have, you know, several advantages in our favor right now. We have the benefit of developing after all the other parts of the world have developed, and therefore we can skip a lot of stages and leapfrog in so many different technologies to allow us to develop much faster and much cheaper. You know, and that's one thing that. If we are careful, and you can see that already, for example, with the advent of the mobile mobile technology in the continent. In just 15 years, Africa went from having less than 400,000 phone lines to almost 700 million phone lines.
Wow.
And in a fraction of the cost, and so much innovation in mobile money and, you know, and mobile insurance, all these different innovations, mobile banking, have happened in Africa. The same thing is about to happen in education as well, because we can leapfrog. For example, the universities of the future are going to be born in Africa, not in the United States.
Right.
Because we don't have the legacy of 200-year-old institutions that we can't change.
So talk to me a little more about the mission behind and the African Leadership Academy. I'm just fascinated by, I love the mission behind this, but tell us a little bit more about that, and maybe give us some examples of success stories of what you see, maybe some rising stars, byproducts of the Academy.
Certainly. The mission of the African Leadership Academy really boils down to this concept that I was describing earlier, that just one or two leaders in Africa will make all the difference for the continent. So our goal is to scour the entire continent. Every year we go around and look for 100 of these leaders from all the 54 countries of Africa. We get about 4,000 applications from all around the continent, and then we take them through a very careful selection process, and we pick the 100 that we believe have the greatest potential to transform the continent. We then give them a world-class education in a two-year boarding school environment in South Africa, almost all of them free of charge. And then we develop their leadership skills and their entrepreneurial skills, and then we help them get into colleges around the world. And they all sign a deal with us that they need to return to Africa by the age of 25 and stay for at least 10 years to serve the continent.
Wow.
And the philosophy there is that, you know, we believe that if you look at a lot of the leaders who changed the world, they started young.
Right.
Nelson Mandela was 21 when he started the ANC Youth League and began his campaign to transform, you know, South Africa. If you look at Bill Gates, he was 19 when he started Microsoft. Mark Zuckerberg, 19 when he started Facebook. The Google founders were 21. Steve Jobs was 19 when he started Apple. Richard Branson was 16. So there's nothing special about the water in Silicon Valley that creates these leaders.
Right.
The only difference is that someone there takes a 16 or 17-year-old kid with an idea seriously, and then next thing, a Facebook is born. And so those same leaders exist in Africa. And so the only difference is that no one has necessarily given them an opportunity to date. So what we're doing is going around and trying to find the next Nelson Mandela, the African Steve Jobs, the African Bill Gates, and we're saying, let's give them that opportunity, educate them, plug them into very powerful networks, and soon you're going to create people who will be able to transform entire nations and, in fact, the entire world.
I love it. I love the optimism. And I think the other thing, too, is tapping into the optimistic nature of the younger generation now, the millennial generation. I think that is another thing going for you as well, an advantage that you're capitalizing on.
Absolutely. And that's a very important advantage, because almost everywhere in the world, populations are aging.
Right.
The only continent in the world where population is still young is Africa. So the average age of an African is 18, whereas the average age of a German or an Italian is 44 or 45, or Japanese. So if you think about the proportion of the societies, you know, in developed world that needs to be supported by the working age, the proportion is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, more and more old people that need to be supported by fewer and fewer young people who are actually productive members of society. And so it's a downward spiral, and you're already seeing that with the Eurozone crisis, with the anemic economy in the US and in Japan and so forth. What we have in Africa is the opposite. We have young, hardworking, energetic people that, you know, and we'll soon, by 2030, we'll have the largest workforce in the world. So this I see is a tremendous opportunity for us to harness, if we can educate this population, develop the and lead them properly, then we have this, we are really going to be the world's engine for economic growth.
Yeah. You know, your curriculum is heavily into, and what I love is heavily kind of centered around entrepreneurship. Do you think the idea of free enterprise and entrepreneurship is something that's is that a cultural challenge in Africa? It seems so natural coming from the United States, but how difficult is it to get people to think like an entrepreneur, I guess?
Funny enough, I would say that most Africans have had to be entrepreneurial in some way or another simply to survive.
Right.
Because there just are not enough jobs on the continent. And even if those who have jobs are not necessarily being paid enough to survive on, so they have to have a second or third job on the side. And very often these are enterprises that they've created themselves. So I think that the energy and the entrepreneurial spirit is there across the continent. What doesn't exist, however, is the structures to allow this raw entrepreneurial energy to build into larger scale enterprises. So you have a lot of what I call subsistence entrepreneurs.
Right.
These are people who have started small ventures. They're maybe looking after themselves or one or two other people. But what we need to progress from is, you know, those more informal, raw entrepreneurial ventures into more formal, larger scale enterprises, which can attract venture capital investment that can eventually create not just jobs for two or three people, but jobs for 1,000 people or 100,000
right.
people. And that's when you really get the engines of economic growth going. And so that's what we're trying to do with the entrepreneurs at the academy that we're developing. We're trying to create people who are going to come up with world-changing innovations that will end up creating hundreds and thousands and eventually millions of jobs for people on the continent of Africa.
I love that. It's good to note the difference. You're like, sustenance entrepreneurship. I'm doing this just to survive. But let's change the mindset to where, okay, let's start creating wealth, real wealth, and creating real jobs. So I think that's great. Hey, I just thought of something too. Like, I'm wondering too, especially, you know, coming from the perspective of the United States and just, you know, people always say, hey, we got to, you know, let's send this aid, let's send all these things. Our government's always talking about sending more aid. I've kind of come, the more that I looked at this, do you think that kind of giving of aid sometimes aids in that corruption? I mean, what is your take on that? I mean, from an American looking in, you think, oh yeah, let's provide, let's support. But it's almost
I think it all boils down to the quality of the political leadership and the strength of the institutions that exist in those countries. So
right.
Certain countries in Africa have good political institutions and good ethical leaders. And so if you send the aid to those countries, it typically does have good impact. But even then, I look at all aid as really just a short-term fix.
Right.
Yeah, because if you look at people who are, you know, you're suffering from a war or they're suffering from famine, it's fine to send a few bags of, you know, of maize meal to feed those people. But they will never be able to feed themselves unless we create scientists who come up with innovations that can allow us to improve our crop yield so that we can forever grow our own crops and we'll never go hungry again. You know, if you send blankets for refugees of a political crisis or a war, they will be able to, you know, be warm for 6 months, but they'll go, you know, unless you can create political leaders who don't go to war in the first place, that cycle will never end. So what we have to do is look at not just giving short-term aid, but really investing in Africa.
Right.
Investing in people so that we can solve our own problems, not just for the short term, but for the long term. And this is why I think that what Africa needs much, much more of than aid is this pure hardcore investment capital, which is going into those African entrepreneurs who are emerging and have large ideas to build and create jobs. Those are the people that we should be backing. And that then also bypasses any, you know, political corruption that could exist, because it's going straight to the entrepreneurs who can use as capital
exactly.
and use it to bring innovations to market and to create jobs and drive down poverty. And that, I believe, is going to be a far better use of international resources than aid.
I love it. Everything you're saying, it just warms my heart, and it makes me so excited for the future of what you're doing, especially with the, you know, how many leaders have you taken through the course now, 400 plus, or how big is this getting?
Thank you. Well, we have over the last 10 years since we began the journey, we've had about 20,000 applicants to the academy, and we have selected 700 of them who are going through the journey. And over a 50-year period, we expect to have created about 6,000 leaders for Africa from the African Leadership Academy. But one thing that has that this idea has evolved into, which is an extension or a sister institution that I'm now launching called African Leadership University. And the idea is really to take some of the leadership training that we've been doing at the academy, the entrepreneurial ethos we've been developing in these young leaders, and do it at a much larger scale. And so over the next 50 years, we're going to be launching 25 brand new universities across Africa.
Oh, great.
And each campus will have 10,000 students. So the idea is that this system of universities will develop 3 million leaders for Africa over the next 50 years. And they will work together with the original 6,000 that are coming out of the academy into a very powerful force that can transform Africa.
Oh, I love it. I love this vision. It's so exciting to see that you're actually doing something, putting something in place, making an impact. It is exciting just to think about, you know, say a generation from now, 50 years, if you've got 6,000 leaders who've been infused with this kind of optimistic entrepreneurial outlook for Africa, think how different that continent's going to be. I mean,
6,000 leaders, but are not also supported by 3 million additional leaders from the university system that are all share the same common ethos around entrepreneurship and leadership and good governance and ethics. That, to me, I believe, is going to be the most powerful force for transforming Africa.
I think you're right. And, you know, and the continent is so rich with all its self-sustaining resources. I mean, that's the thing that I think most people need to understand is the continent is rich to be self-sustaining in so many ways and to be a huge global player in the world. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people don't realize, especially when you're just getting sound bites over here about what Africa looks like. I mean, all you think about is, you know, Ebola and corruption and everything else. But the reality is that it's a different picture.
Exactly. Exactly. I believe that Africa today is where China was 30 years ago.
I think,
it's the most exciting entrepreneurial opportunity of our generation. And those who get on the ground floor and invest on the continent and back some of these emerging young leaders, some of whom we're creating at the African Leadership Academy and that will also be coming out of African Leadership University. The people who get in now are going to make not just a lot of money, but also a lot of difference.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like about doing work in Africa is that you don't have to, you know, in other markets, you might have to have one side of your life, which is all focused on making money. And then you turn around and give that money away to charity to feel like you're having an impact. In Africa, you can merge both.
Right.
The work that you do, even if it's making you money, will ultimately be creating jobs, will be transforming lives. And so you can feel really good about anything that you invest in Africa.
Oh, this is great. Who are your heroes? If you had a chance to invite five people to the ultimate dinner party, live or dead, who would those five people be?
Great question. Well, I would say definitely Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, sure.
That goes without saying. In terms of, you know, just he really embodies what just one leader can do.
Right.
To transform an entire country and an entire nation. I would also invite an innovator like Steve Jobs. I think that what, you know, this single-minded focus on creating products that can really transform the way we live and work, I think is something that inspires me. I'd also bring Elon Musk to the table. I love his unconventional way of thinking. And I think that's the kind of, and also I like the fact that he's originally South African.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the kind of thinking that I think we need to transform Africa. I'm also inspired by Mother Teresa.
Oh, good choice, yeah.
And in terms of just her selfless way of giving back and really showing that leaders, ultimately, they're not to enrich and power themselves, but really to serve others.
Right.
And then finally, I would also bring someone like the Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Who I think also really or someone like the Dalai Lama, who both of them, to me, embody good ethical leadership.
Yeah, what a great choice. What a great list. I mean, you know, a combination of the, you know, the entrepreneurial, you know, reach for the stars innovation mindset, and along with the spiritual mindset, the ethical side of leadership too. What a great combination. And it says a lot about who you are, Fred. So I think that's a great list.
Wow. Thank you. Well, I hope I'll get to at least meet some of them in my lifetime.
Sure. Well, how can people help? Where can people get in touch with you, find out more about you, and kind of help your cause?
Well, they can go to our website, africanleadershipacademy.org. They can send me an email, fswanika@africanleadershipacademy.org. We're always looking for different ways for people to get involved. We have almost 300 of our young leaders who are studying at various colleges in the United States. And so, you know, they often need support in terms of host families, for a place to go for Thanksgiving or Christmas. If people come and visit South Africa, we'd love to invite them to campus to come and see what we're doing, sometimes to serve as guest speakers on our campus to inspire our young leaders. We are looking for folks to provide scholarships funding and other forms of financial support, because 85% of our students who come to the African Leadership Academy come from disadvantaged backgrounds and come on full scholarships. So we're always looking for folks to support those scholarships. And finally, you know, we're looking for folks who can help with career opportunities, to give young leaders mentorship and, you know, their first career opportunity, because we believe that a lot of them need to get work experience at least for a few years before they go off and, you know, enter politics or start their own ventures or, you know, whatever they want to do to create change on the continent. So there are various ways that people can get involved, and we welcome all of those.
Well, Fred, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'll have links to all these. Plus, I'll have a link to your TED Talk, which is a great source, too, for inspiration and information for all that we've talked about today. I can't say enough of what you're doing. I mean, you're one of the guys that's out there that's actually doing it. You're not talking about leadership. You're actually doing something and making an impact. And I applaud you on your vision and your mission. And you always have a welcome home here at Dose of Leadership. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very, very much, Richard. I'm honored to have been there on your show, and I really appreciate all your support.
All right, Fred, thanks. Well, one of the things that really jazzes me up about this show is meeting people like Fred. I mean, here's an example of a man who's taking action. He has a vision, he has a dream, and he refuses to listen to the naysayers. And so I love his forward thinking, I love his vision, and I love, most importantly, that he's actually taking action. We can learn a lot from Fred, and no matter what our visions, no matter our dream are, we can do something to start making a positive effect, both in our personal lives, professional lives, and those that are closest to us. We have much more influence than we give ourselves credit for, and that's my big takeaway from talking with Fred. So I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Fred. Again, drop me a line at richard@doseofleadership.com. Let me know what you think about this show. Let me know where you're at in your leadership journey. I'm always here to help. You can find out more information also at doseofleadership.com or richardryerson.com. You know, and if you haven't done so already, please subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher to this show. Leave a ranking, rating, and review at both of those places if you haven't done so. It only takes about 5 minutes, and it does so much for my visibility in those two places. Again, thanks so much for tuning into the show, and we'll see you next time.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at caskers.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.